Yeah, I'm okay, we're recording. So I'm just gonna leave that right there.
So I can ask all my
questions. So say it again. So so I have on the beginning of the question that I mentioned.
So what are you trying to do?
The short story is I several years ago I tried to start a self-help mental health website for youth experiencing adversity. Mm-hmm. The end result of that, without going into the long story, is the foresight model. So it's basically a new way of looking at how people think and what drives their behavior. Mm-hmm. The thing that I found about foresight is that it's when you see it in action, and you know, like when I work with other people and I tell them about it in an interactive fashion, it makes a lot of sense.
Yeah,
it's really hard to kind of present it to someone else when they don't see it in action. And that makes sense because basically I think like most, I think differently than most other people. Mm-hmm. So it really helps a lot of other people when they see this kind of interactive thing, either when I'm talking to them or they listen to me talking to someone else, it really gels for them. Mm-hmm. So the primary driver of the podcast is to kind of, you know, build up a portfolio that people can listen to so they can better understand what foresight does.
Yeah.
The other aspect of it is the thing I was kind of talking about, which is there's a formula to it, right? And I'm trying to figure out how to develop the algorithm. So if I talk to enough people and I kind of go through the process enough, I'll see the patterns that emerge, and I'll be able to helpfully, again, build up some type of self-help mechanism where people could use like a web app and, you know, help themselves figure out what the conflict is that they're experiencing.
Okay, so it's just about series of questions about the conflict.
I start by asking, do you have any questions as far as other than what you already asked? You don't have to visit the website. Some people do. If you have, I'll ask whether or not you have any questions from that.
I have not visited the website.
Okay, and that's fine. You know, foresight is really designed to work by itself, be self-sufficient without having any prior knowledge. Mm-hmm. So hopefully after today, after our hour or so of speaking, you'll be able to take home some stuff and that'll be helpful to you.
Okay.
All right, so let's start the interview process. It's very casual. There's no, you know, nothing surreptitious about it. It'll be very transparent. All right. And that'll become evident to you as we begin to talk. So the way that we start is I'll say this, you know, kind of tell me about yourself, who you are, what things do you like? What kind of music do you listen to? What do you do for fun? If you're working, what do you like to do for a job? And what your childhood was like? Just give me some ideas as to who you are.
Well, I mean, lately I've gone through like just a horrible depression that's kind of been coupled with drug addiction and just failed relationships.
Okay.
As far as work goes, I kind of work irregular hours with odd jobs, a lot of fundraising, political, a lot of canvassing.
So how come that? Do you like talking to other people?
Yeah, I like talking to other people. It's kind of, I can manage myself in a lot of ways, and there's not someone breathing down my neck all day.
Right.
And yeah, I can make clear goals for myself, and I can, you know, be outside, so.
Right. Yeah. So there's no, like, rigid, like, 9-to-5 schedule, and it's kind of like work at your own pace thing.
Yeah. Exactly.
Okay.
Yeah. I enjoy that kind of work.
Well, it's good that you understand, you know, what works for you,
yeah.
And that you, you know, you find something that matches what you're comfortable with.
Yeah, yeah. But, it just work's been all over the place. Like, I just recently finished canvassing with the Kate Brown campaign, and that was, like, that was a big thing for me because I haven't been canvassing for a while before that was with OPB.
Right.
But the drug addiction's kind of just crippled my ability to.
That will definitely take away a lot of your time.
Yeah, but it's. Yeah.
And that's fine. So here's the thing. So, you know, the podcast is. It's the follow up on the Craigslist ad. Is mm-hmm. what conflict are you experiencing, right?
The conflict that I'm experiencing.
So before we get into that, I'm saying is that there is a no judgment factor, and we are doing this anonymously.
Okay.
So, you know, you're welcome to share whatever you feel comfortable with sharing, and certainly don't worry that there's going to be judgment, right?
I'm not worried about that. Yeah. I'll just let it come out. I just gotta, you know.
Yeah. Yeah. I just want to, you know, make sure that everything is well understood.
Yeah.
Okay.
I'm not really. I don't care much about judgment.
Okay.
I face judgment all the time, so it's just okay. I perceive that I'm being judged constantly, so it's,
right.
You know.
Right.
But the conflict that I'm facing, it's a lot of relationship troubles.
Right. Well, so before we get into that, give me a little more background. Maybe tell me like your family life, because that's certainly usually a typical IN on kind of the, you know, where you are at now. You know, where you came from, it usually drives where you're at now.
My family life. I have two younger sisters, and they all live. Closest to my age sister, she lives in Washington, up in Vancouver, mm-hmm. and my youngest sister lives in Florida. So we're all kind of spread out. And my mother lives in New York. My father died about 10 years ago, I think.
Sorry to hear that. What was the, you know, was that natural causes or?
No, heart disease, endocarditis.
Which is what?
It's an infection of the heart that, well, in this case, it spread to his brain and
passed. Is that something that, what's the origins of that? Is that a genetic thing or just a fluke thing?
Well, he got it. He had a heart surgery, so the valve became infected when he got.
Was he overweight? Did he have cardiovascular issues?
Yeah, he was a smoker for most of his life.
Okay,
that's kind of
what I was getting at. Right. Yeah. Okay.
Smoker, but mostly it was just a heart surgery when he was a child and heart issues that kind of followed him through life.
Okay.
Until death.
All right. Mm. Sorry to hear that. You know, but yeah.
Yeah.
And so you said you have one, so you're the middle child?
The oldest.
The oldest, okay. And you said, so the younger sister is in Florida?
Yeah, the youngest.
Did she follow a job there? What would made her move there?
I was born in New York. We kind of lived most of our lives in Florida, and then I moved from New York back up to New York to out here.
Well, I'm from New York originally. What part?
Long Island.
What part of Long Island?
Ronkonkoma.
Ronkonk?
Yeah.
Oh, that's so weird.
Yeah.
I we had someone else tell me that recently. I grew up in Hicksville.
Oh yeah.
Yeah. So you know the Long Island Railroad really well.
Yeah, my grandfather worked on it. Most of my.
Oh really?
Yeah, most of my family on my dad's side worked on it.
And how old are you when you moved down to Florida?
Like 5.
So pretty young.
Yeah, pretty young.
What part of Florida?
Brevard County, Space Coast.
Okay. I had grandparents on the East Coast and the West Coast. Mm. It's New York South. Everybody from New York knows Florida as New York South. What precipitated the move down to Florida?
My father had an accident and lost half his foot.
Right.
And wanted to live in a warmer climate and cheaper. So,
okay.
Yeah.
Okay. And did that work out well for the family? What, you know, was there financial stability or was it erratic at home?
For the most part, it was okay. There were times of financial instability, but
right. Which isn't bad. I went through hardship. I have 3 kids. You know, there were definitely times when it was hard for me to pay the bills and stuff like that.
Yeah.
Right.
Yeah, and then financial crisis and stuff. But by that time, my father was dead. We lost the house.
Oh, so you lost the house.
Lost the house. We ended up renting. My mom wasn't great at keeping up with things.
Right. Okay. Yeah. Did she work, or was she like a stay at home mom?
She was a teacher.
What? A teacher?
Yeah.
Okay. What's the age difference between you and your sisters? Are you close?
It's pretty much 2 years. So 2 years for me to my next.
And then 2 more years, right? Youngest, same thing with my kids. Yeah. Okay. Interesting. And I had 2 boys and a girl, so kind of the opposite. Did you move to Portland by yourself?
Yeah.
What drove you to do that? And how long ago did that happen?
That was about 4 years ago, and that was to quit heroin.
Okay.
Yeah.
So right, that's good.
Yeah. I had a period of sobriety after I moved out here for a few years. And
right.
Depression, I couldn't kick it. And just started, I was feeling very low and I needed to have something to kind of just shut me down for a while.
I understand. It's your go-to coping mechanism.
Yeah.
Right?
Yeah.
When things are piling up and your brain, you know, that's the solution for you.
Yeah.
How young were you when you first started it? Did you do other stuff before that?
Oh yeah, the OxyContin,
Right.
That's
okay.
That starts it.
Yeah. So were you taking that for? Was that prescribed and that was a painkiller or?
No. It was just I've lived in Florida and
It was freely available.
Yeah, it was available.
And what age did you do that?
I think the first time I tried it was about 16, and it was my father's pills, and
And the benefits are. There's the typical, reasons why people do heroin. For you, it could be the numbing. It could be the euphoria that you feel from it initially. A little bit of both. Okay.
Yeah.
Right. Okay. So you moved here about 4 years ago. Are you a seasonal affective disorder person? Do you kind of get bummed during the winter?
Just bummed all the time.
Okay. All right. Fair enough. Right. But, and we have beautiful summers, so it's not as easy during the summer, but it's still possible.
Yeah.
Right. All right, so let's so why don't you, that I mean, it kind of gives me a good background. You know, I don't necessarily understand the causes of it, but you know, the drivers are that, you know, there's this this voice going on in your head, and it's you want to quiet it down. We'll figure out what that voice is saying to you in a little bit. But why don't you tell me about your challenge, your conflict?
My conflict now is just finding some kind of emotional stability in my or any kind of I don't know, stable footing, like any kind of, I don't know, I feel like I'm spiraling.
Right.
My life is just spiraling right. out of control.
Okay, and you're reaching out.
Yeah.
Okay, so that's a good thing. I'll I want to tell you that.
You know, $50.
Right. Yeah. Right. Yeah. No, that's fine. I get it. So as far as, you know, it's kind of goes without saying, when a person is unable to find stability in their life, they didn't have it when they were growing up, right?
Mm-hmm.
So, you know, was it erratic at home? You know, was there instability or, you know?
Just my father's temper.
Right. Okay.
Yeah.
So one of the typical things, I guess it's a fairly descriptive phrase. It's called intermittent explosive disorder. Mm-hmm. You don't know when he's going to blow up.
Yeah.
So you walk around on eggshells all the time.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. Right. Yeah, you know, the thing is, so by the time we're age three, we kind of build the model of what the world is like, right? And based upon that world, you can correct that model your whole life, right? So your model probably by age three, although you're not going to have any memories until before you were six, that model probably said, oh, the world's unstable, right? Mm-hmm. The problem then becomes is that when you get to the real world, the real world is actually stable to some extent. Now, we can kind of disagree as to what that means. But by and large, things here are pretty stable, right? From day to day, it's not like many third world countries where we have, you know, senseless killings going on left and right. Bombs aren't, you know, blowing up buildings. It's a fairly stable environment. But you'll get into a cycle where you're used to that. And it's almost like an adrenaline junkie, right? And so sometimes you'll engage in behavior that maybe will cause that that instability to arise. Because
mm-hmm.
and it's a really interesting, because it's like I've seen this before in people. So you're feeling anxious, right? Everything's fine and you're feeling anxious, right? Mm-hmm. So then you actually do something to cause, you know, a fight or an argument or something like that, and you actually relax. Does that sound like anything that you've ever, you know, been through?
Pretty close, yeah.
Okay, so tell me how. So, you know, how does that manifest itself specifically with you?
Well, in the most recent, it's something that's just been on my mind. It's with my on-off girlfriend. She's telling me that I do that sort of thing. Like, okay. Everything will be going fine, and I'll pick a fight just right. to say that right. it's not fine. I have to bring up this everything from something about the relationship that's not going well. That I have to just pick at it
right. Have you seen that pattern before she brought it up to you? Do you think that's valid?
I can't really think of any others, but I think it is a valid point, because right. I do like to pick apart things. I notice the flaws in things, and I kind of just obsess over them until I
I'm not looking to pick you apart, so please don't think anything I take as judgmental. Clearly right now you're very, I'm not agitated, but very active, right?
Mm-hmm.
Are there times during the day, like when you had that, you said a 2-year sobriety period?
Three and a half.
Yeah. All right. So that's good for you. How was it during that time?
I mean, it was fine. I finished my associate's degree. I was accepted to PSU.
You got to be productive.
Yeah. Yeah.
All right. Yeah. I mean, and that's good, right? Because sometimes necessarily you kind of find this calm and sober period, and you're like, oh shit, what do I do now, right? But you're able to, kind of collect yourself and get things done, right? Mm-hmm. Was there something that, you know, kind of led to leaving it? You know, was there a big event in your life or something like that? What triggered the getting back on drugs?
Getting back on drugs? Relationship. That was it. We got back together after years apart. She moved out here to be with me, and it just...
So she was from Florida?
Yeah.
Okay. So you had dated in Florida?
Yeah. Dated in Florida years.
And for 3.5 years, you were sober. At what point during those 3.5 years did the sobriety end? When she came out, or did it end like after 3 years?
No, after she came out. A few months after she came out.
Okay. So were you not having relationships during that 3.5 years?
No, I was. I was. But
they weren't your, they didn't have that passion, that chemistry or whatever it was?
Yeah.
Right. Again, not, you know, the unfortunate thing is, and I'm not looking also to pick on your parents, but, you know, it's whatever models we get during that first 3 years of life, that's kind of what we get, it appeals to us, mm-hmm. right? For better or worse, yeah. right? So, I don't know, was your mother a high energy person, or what was she like? Was she full of energy, full of life, that kind of person? Or?
No.
How would you describe her?
Depressed, kind of.
So the other way around.
Yeah.
Okay.
Not.
So someone is full of life is kind of appealing to you, I would guess, right?
Yeah.
Yes? How would you describe this girlfriend? Is she like that?
Incredibly depressed and okay. Actively seeking death. She's suicidal and
which ironically can be exciting and I'm not saying in a good way, but obviously that's kind of living on the edge, right? And if you're a person who is again programmed to kind of this instability, right? Mm-hmm. Having that feeds your adrenaline.
Yeah.
Right. So you're out here, you're sober. What compels you to bring her out here?
I just missed her. We stayed in touch for years.
But why did you miss her? So
she's the one of the only one of my first serious relationships, and right. I've always loved her, and I still do. And right.
So you give me reasons why you wouldn't love her, right?
Yeah.
Depressive, suicidal, right? Those are hopefully not positive. You hope you don't look like I want to have a relationship with that, right? I mean, is that correct? So there are other things from her that are appealing to you,
yeah,
correct?
Yeah,
right?
Yeah.
Right. And what are those things?
Her. I can relate to her. She's known me. She I feel like I have the same kind of like we speak the same language.
Right.
Like we know what each other are thinking.
Right. Well, yeah. Well, potentially you both have the same emotional flaws.
Yeah.
If you're both depressive, then you're both kind of right.
We have the same kind of triggers. We fall down just as hard at the same times.
Right. How are you good? How are you guys at supporting each other? Are you good at the positive feedback and being there for each other? Or do you bring each other down, or both?
Both. It depends on. It depends on how much money's in the bank.
Right. Okay.
Yeah.
And that's, you bring up an interesting point. One of the things that a lot of people don't understand is, and they do this judgment a lot when they look at people, for example, who are experiencing homelessness, people who are addicted, or, people who are, committing crimes, right?
Mm-hmm.
They look down at these people like, I'm better than them, and there's something wrong with them. And the main differentiating factor for most of the times between them and you is money.
Yeah.
They grew up in a better off family and a better off neighborhood.
That's all.
And they have a little more cushion, which means they can reduce the stressors.
Yeah.
Right? So the fact that, my downturn might mean, I have to take out a loan or get another credit card, right? My financial downturn is very, I can salvage, getting kicked out on the street. For you, it's more of a huge struggle. It might mean, I don't get to pay rent this month and I'm going to be kicked out,
yeah.
right? So, I bring it up just because it's as much for you as, I guess, kind of the audience. It's for people to understand that these stressors are what, is that gray line that we walk. And you're just not as financially capable of handling those. As a result, it becomes a dividing factor for your relationship. And now you get two people who sink into depression, right?
Yeah.
Do you get suicidal at all, or is that also just her?
No, I'm okay. Constantly suicidal, suicidal thoughts. I haven't had any kind of attempt in years, but
any what year attempt in year? Okay,
yeah. But it's it's never something that's far from my mind.
Right. So what do you guys do? Is there any attempt at we're kind of in this downward spiral and we need help, and what can we do? Do you guys go to therapy? Do you look up books?
Well, no, we both go to a methadone clinic now. Like, I just got on methadone, which was, it was huge to
right
to just finally try to get some stability going.
Right.
But we're also, you know, we're on meth too. So
right. Right.
You know, but that keeps the depression away for the most part. Because before I got on OHP and started getting on methadone clinic, I haven't been to a doctor in years. I haven't had any of my, any kind of medication. I haven't had any kind of treatment. Right. So.
And, you know, they're starting to look at some substances that used to be used in the past, and unfortunately they're now illegal. One of them, for example, is MDMA, right? Mm-hmm. And, you know, the thing about that helps someone like you is that, one, it gives you that euphoric feeling, so it gives you that good feeling, but it also slows you down, right? And that's, of course, the disadvantages with heroin and meth, is that you don't get that slowdown period. You just kind of, speed is speed, right? You know, you get all hyper and you know, you're not really working on things or processing things.
Yeah.
You're kind of ignoring them or avoiding them, right?
Mm-hmm.
Do you guys, you know, I guess, so here's one of the tough things, you know, you're being in this economic strata. You're not going to a therapist once a week because you don't really have the money for it. When you go to the methadone clinic, do they have any type of, emotional wellness programs?
Yes, they do. They have all kinds of groups. While I was working with the Cape Brown campaign, I really didn't have the time to go to the groups. I still have to go. I have a bunch of shit that I have to do.
Right.
That's still on my plate for tomorrow before I go to work.
Right. Well, I mean, it's really hard to kind of collect yourself to do stuff when you feel like you're spinning out of control, right?
Yeah.
Right. Yeah. And like I said, I'm just helping you understand you, and you know this, right?
Uh huh.
It's just a question of, you know, how do you gather that self control maybe to slow it down for a day or so and maybe get into some of these programs.
Well, to slow it down for a day, I have no idea. I don't know what I would have to do.
Okay, and that's fair enough. That's fine, you know. I mean, that makes sense, right? If you had, you know, in the end, there's a lot of things that people don't think about drugs. And in the end, you don't want to be doing the drugs, right? But there's this compunction and the self-control thing that make you do it, right?
Yeah.
So it's exactly that answer. It's, how do I turn it off for a second? I don't know how to do that.
Well, it's to turn off the drugs or turn off just like everything spiraling out of control. Because the drugs, you know, they dry up when the money dries up or, you know.
Yeah. Do you guys have a stable living environment or?
No. That's the thing. The place could go. I haven't paid the rent. We're late on the rent.
Right.
I'm waiting for my check from the canvassing gig to come through the mail. And us both get paid from the theater that we work at.
Right.
And after that, we have a month to get next month's rent.
Right.
So the clock starts to go. Starts over.
Is there, you know, it's... I'm trying to avoid kind of getting into specific, help, although, you know, when I look, so Foresight talks about your emotions undermine your day-to-day life, right?
Mm-hmm.
When they get so overwhelming and they get to your extent where, you know, basic functioning becomes a problem, you know, my telling you and talking about higher level emotional stuff is less helpful, right? You to some extent you kind of know what's going on, right? You're triggered left and right, and you're just and you lack the basic ability to kind of to do some of the things that other people might be able to do, right? For example, go to some of these programs, right?
Mm-hmm.
Which is a bit unfortunate because obviously you're a pretty personable person. You like to do things where you talk to people.
Yeah.
So a group setting would help.
Thing about the group setting, though, the thing about the programs at the methadone clinic, those are environments where I'm incredibly anxious.
Because the other people,
the other people, any kind of, it might sound strange to say, but in this kind of environment, knowing what I would be walking into, I'd know what I'd be walking into there, but, this seems for some reason, I'm separated from it to a degree.
Right.
And whereas when I'm there in the clinic, in a group setting with, 15 other people around me, I'm just kind of there and I want to kind of get out.
Right. You know? Well, yeah, I mean, there's a couple things going on. You know, certainly. So they talk about psychological resilience. Are you familiar with that term?
No.
And it's basically your ability to deal with adversity, right?
Mm-hmm.
And really what that means is when you're being triggered emotionally, being able to keep your cool, right? Mm-hmm. So clearly, you know, if you're triggering yourself, you're, you know, in an environment where people are triggering you, it's going to make you even more anxious, right? And, you know, it's kind of the unfortunate notions of a lot of these programs is that you're with a bunch of other people who are like you, yeah. right? And you're all going to be triggering each other off, and it kind of becomes this little nuclear reactor.
I've had some very bad experiences in a lot of group environments like that.
How so? Like what?
Just being put down or to like be a negative center of attention in some of these groups, in like recovery groups or something like that.
Yeah.
It's something that I really hate to, like, just to be like mocked openly. Like
right. That. Yeah, you know, I'm not super familiar with groups, and your input is actually very helpful and insightful. In general, I'm not a big fan of them because of the thing I was talking about. To me, if you have a person like you, right, who is anxious and kind of, you know, just agitated or something like that, putting them with any other number of people who may be that state is not going to be very helpful, right?
Yeah.
You kind of need, and it's a kind of a bad example. Are you familiar? Well, I was saying One Flew Over the Cuckoo's Nest. Do you know Nurse Ratched, who's really calm? And I mean, she's not a good example because she was pretty sadistic. But, you know, what you need is someone who's going to be calm even while you're kind of flit about until you, you know, are able to maybe to collect yourself, yeah. right?
Yeah. I did have that briefly at Cascadia, but it was too much of a hassle to get down there. And right. I can't remember what happened, but
so you're talking about the place on Division? I know that they have
it was a great, great place.
Right. Okay. So it was one-on-one stuff?
Yeah, yeah. One-on-one right. stuff. They set me up a lot of services too that I couldn't figure out, I couldn't get to. Like, I don't have internet. I don't have service on my phone. It's
Again, you know, there's things people take for granted, and I totally get.
Yeah.
If you're a guy who is, you know, doing everything possible to buy drugs, you know, the second you get a phone, well, 3 weeks later, like, oh, shit, I can sell this phone, and I can get some more stuff, right? Yeah. You know, that's going to happen at times.
A lot of times, though, with the drugs, I'm getting them for free. Like,
right.
The meth, they just kind of come. Like, well, they come with a girlfriend, or the last girlfriend that I had, they would just...
Right.
People would be around, and then we would have drugs.
Right. But yeah.
It's just,
yeah.
I don't even know what it is. Like.
so let's play, you know, I'm like fantasy here. What do you envision, if anything, as a solution? And here's one, let me give you one scenario just to start things off. We find a cabin that is supportive in the middle of Eastern Oregon, where there's nothing else around, right? Mm-hmm. And you're kind of confined to that, not cabin, but let's say a small town, right? Where this other stuff is just not available, including other people who are, you know, are having their own issues and are agitated and doing drugs. Is putting you in that kind of calm, you know, inaccessible environment for a couple of months, would that help you do it? Or are you going to spin out of control there?
Yeah, it's been out of control there.
How come?
I can't stand the quiet. Like,
So do you know why?
I don't exactly know why.
So we talked about it in the beginning, right? Yeah. So and this is, you know, it may or may not be helpful to you, right?
Mm-hmm.
If you grow up in an environment, and there's a book called Adult Children of Alcoholic Families, something like that, and basically is that when you're used to growing up in an environment where this person's blowing up for no reason every now and again, you get used to the adrenaline.
Mm-hmm.
And when things are calm and stable, you kind of, you know, you don't know what to do with yourself. And it's your anticipation of it, the calm before the storm.
Yeah.
And that's literally unnerving, and obviously very unnerving for you. If you were active, if there was a, you know, in this small town, if you were working every day, pushing yourself 8 hours a day, so you were just so exhausted, like in a lumber mill or something like that, would that help? Or, you know... Do you need, you know, some type of insanity or craziness going on?
I need some kind of insanity or craziness. Like, I've done this exact scenario.
So how'd you do it in 3.5 years then? How was that able to happen?
I was out here. I got out. I dated a lot and just kind of have my own kind of smaller scale control craziness,
right? Yeah. Like what was that?
I risky sex, but other than that, like, I started making podcasts.
Oh, did you really? Okay.
Yeah.
So there was a creative outlet.
Yeah.
Right, that's good. You know, risky sex is not great. It's better than, you know, certainly doing heroin, right?
Yeah.
So for 3.5 years, did you not do any drugs, or are you doing other drugs?
No, I didn't do any drugs.
That's, I mean, I'm astonished by that. Are you?
Not really.
Why not? I mean, 3.5 years, that's like 8,000 lifetimes for you.
Yeah, I mean, doing drugs and not doing drugs, it doesn't really make a difference. Like, people have so this weight behind using drugs. Like, there's really nothing. I get people treating me like it's like some kind of moral failure. Like, it's, you know, that doing drugs are, it's unethical to do drugs, or doing drugs are a bad thing.
I'll tell you, I don't agree with any of that. But what I do see is that, well, so first of all, you're telling me, you know, it's the fact that the drugs are leading to the depression or enabling it, right, in some way?
If I could afford the drugs and, well,
still function,
and if I could cope with the shit going on around me without the use of the drugs as a crutch, they're fine.
Okay, like, and that's fair enough.
I feel like, you know, some people say, like, people who are using drugs are using it to treat or self-medicate on, you know, their own mental illness or whatever.
Right.
But it's just, you know, coping mechanisms for people who don't. That's the only coping
mechanism. Right, right. But I mean, to be fair, I mean, self-medicating and a coping mechanism are one and the same thing, you know? Here's the thing. So let's back up a second, right? I know what self-medicating means, right?
Yeah.
I don't think there's anything wrong with it, so to speak, right? I get it, right? Because I know that the person who's making $100,000 a year is self-medicating with Adderall, but that's okay because he gets it from his doctor, right? Mm-hmm. And the fact that you're doing heroin and meth is not good because, well, someone up there said, you know, meth and heroin are bad and Adderall are good, right? Mm-hmm. Which is, I know it's as bogus as you are, right?
Mm-hmm.
So there is no negative stigma, as far as I'm concerned, associated with self-medication. I understand. I see it as more of a societal problem, right? But that's, let's not worry about that. So,
yeah.
But it is a coping mechanism, and that's fine. I liken it to when you break your leg, for some period of time, you're going to have a cast and or a crutch, right?
Yeah.
And that's fine. But ultimately, we want to get to the point where we don't have the crutch and the cast, right? Mm-hmm. So, you know. If you could find how to do that, you'd be fine, but you have to be able to not spin out of control when you don't do the drugs, right?
Yeah.
And, you know, no one's, I imagine, has ever, well, you haven't had the opportunity to do that. Because in the end, there are bad effects from the drugs, right? I mean, I'm on your side, right? You don't necessarily want to do the drugs because it feels like crap afterwards, right?
Yeah, I don't like coming down.
Right. Well, there you go, right? You know, so that's part of it. And then there's, over the long term, you know, you're pretty young still. You're pretty, you know, physically resilient. At some point, it's going to beat the crap out of your body. I mean, it is. You are taking a physical toll. And, you know, for some people, there's a slow suicide to it, right?
Yeah.
Hey, I don't want to live to 70 or 80. I'm fine with 40. Let me have some good fun for the next 10 years. And, you know, maybe kind of, you know, and the point that I kind of want to get to is that you're allowed to live whatever life that you want, right?
Mm-hmm.
So if you're thinking that drugs are the way to go and you know, I'm more, what do you want, right? So you're telling me your conflict is somewhat, at least indirectly, drug-related because it's the depression? Or how would you?
I mean, I'd say, like,
What is the conflict? Let's go back to that. It's the relationship, right?
The relationship is a huge conflict, but it's a lot right. of this so, is projecting so, my own.
Okay, so and let's be fair. And again, I'm not looking to, again, really important for you to know that I'm not looking to make you feel bad, right?
I know.
Right. So let's get to some, I guess, ground agreement, right?
Okay.
Potentially, both of you doing drugs makes you less able to emotionally handle the relationship conflict, correct?
Yeah.
Okay. All right. That's fine. So it's you know, it's a kind of, you know, good and bad thing, right? It helps you cope, but also makes it harder for you to do the relationship.
Yeah.
If you two were able to, find a way of not doing the drugs and reducing the conflict at the same time. What is your like? What is your dream? What is your dream solution?
My dream.
Having enough money, you know, like become a rock star. You have enough money to do all the drugs. Yeah. Is that, you know, kind of a dream solution for you?
I mean, the drugs aren't really.
I'm not saying in a derogatory fashion. I'm saying that's in my mind. I mean. You have Prince and you have, I guess Michael, George Michael as well. You have plenty of stars who have gone around and not done so well, but...
Yeah, but I mean, the drugs aren't like the end goal. Like, the drugs aren't really what I want.
That's right.
It's not like
what do you want? The rainbow. What do you want?
Just to feel, like, comfortable. Just to feel like I don't have that weight on my shoulders constantly.
Right. And the drugs make you feel like you don't have that weight.
Yeah. Lifts it up for a little bit.
Right. What is that weight?
The financial burden of life. Just like having money to feed myself and have shelter. Just the basic needs.
It's funny that's I say I don't want to necessarily use the word funny. It's interesting. So I one of my what do you call it? I have a lot of opinions in the homelessness in the area of people experiencing homelessness, and what I have three kids, and when they were younger, I needed a babysitter, so I used to give someone a free room upstairs for a period of like 6 months, and in exchange they would watch my kids. Right, mm-hmm. I wanted to go out, and that was my way of getting what I wanted, and what I was looking for is someone who was in a situation not unlike yours where. They just needed kind of like a safety net for a short period of time, right?
Mm-hmm.
And and to me that's important. It's an important concept that tends to be lost in society, right? Your healthcare, shelter, food, and clothing needs, right? If those are all met, potentially that could slowly get the weight off your shoulders, right?
Yeah.
At the same time. If I was administering the program, I'd say, hey, look, dude, okay, you promised me you're going to calm down. I call your bluff, right? And that's fine, because, you to some extent need some of that, for lack of a better word, parenting. And I don't mean that in a bad way, right?
Mm-hmm.
You're having challenges controlling yourself. Sometimes someone else helping you direct you in your best interest is a beneficial thing. Yeah. Does that make sense?
Yeah.
Okay. All right. Yeah, I mean, it's. I wish there was a program. Does Cascadia offer something where you get free housing and food or something like that?
I don't know. Like, I think they do something like that. I haven't been there long enough because I stopped going in like the middle of July. So
right.
I don't know.
I know, like transition projects. I know they offer temporary shelters.
I'm familiar with
the. Have you familiar with them?
Just
something. Give me the insights. You're making a face, and I want to know what your opinion is because you're their client, right?
At TPI, they're kind of notorious for like you're not getting clean. You're not getting the kind of help that you need. From what I understand, like I've heard a lot of,
Look, I'm. This is, the podcast goes two ways, right? Yeah. I'm giving you information and you're giving me information because, and I take it from a different tack. So one of my favorite phrases is, do you want to be right or do you want to be successful, right? And, there is, in the end, there's no such thing as right,
mm-hmm.
right? So a lot of things you're talking about as far as like the judgment that you receive from other people, they're wrong in making those judgments, right? In the end, you are you. And there is a different you that both you and they want to help you get to, mm-hmm. right? And unless you work on it in some collaborative fashion, you're not going to get there.
Yeah.
Right. If I tell you, hey, this is where you need to be happy, and you need to go do this, right? And you're like, hey, man, that's great. I just don't have the emotional capability of doing that, right?
Mm-hmm.
Well, first of all, you're probably not going to say that, right? But in effect, that's what you're going to imply, and that's you're not going to be successful unless you're emotionally. Also taken care of,
mm-hmm.
and that's part of it's kind of a really good thing to focus here, right?
Mm-hmm.
You need to be emotionally satisfied as well, because if you're not, then this is what's going to happen. You're going to kind of spiral out.
Yeah. Right? And I'm trying to find out what that looks like, because I'm after working with the campaign, I want to find that job that's just going to, I don't know, fulfill that, like, well, just basic needs, like, you know, money to keep a roof over my head.
Well, what were the best jobs that you had while you were during that 3.5 year period? Were any of them up there, you know?
Nah, I mean, the one, I work at a movie theater administering market research tests, so it's like...
I show movies and getting their feedback, before the movie was launched?
Yeah, like I show trailers and ask people what they think of, because it's laid back and I get to sit around and talk about movies all day with people. Right. That's cool. I'm on my feet for like 14 hours a day.
Right. With the web, sorry?
I'm on my feet for 14 hours a day.
So. And you like that. And you know, so here's the point. You clearly understand yourself to some extent, right? Mm-hmm. You like to be active and being driven and pushed, right?
Yeah.
And you have that high energy level where you can do that, right? Mm-hmm. You kind of, you have this, you know, for lack of a better phrase, you have a nuclear reactor inside you, right? Mm-hmm. That's always going to be there, probably until you die, and that's fine. I'm a high energy, you know, you may not know it from talking to me now, but I'm the same high energy person, right? Mm. The difference is that obviously, you know, I'm able to manage it and drive it. And the cool thing is that under the right management, you know, you can do the same thing, you know, having that kind of, you know, that engine can be great if you can harness it.
Yeah.
If you don't, you know.
I hate that too, because I feel like there's just so much energy I waste going to absolutely nothing.
Right. Yeah, it's, you know, you have your emotional side, but in the end, your rational, higher-level thinking is always there.
Yeah.
So you can kid yourself for a period of time, and it could be the duration of the drug or whatever, but in the end, logic kicks in, and you're like, yeah, I felt like I was running a mile a minute, but I moved 3 feet. And you know, so
reality,
and hence the depression. So yeah, mm-hmm. Of course the drugs will exacerbate that, right? You know, in the end, the reality is going to kick in.
And like I said, the drugs aren't even like, they're not what I want. And I'm trying to keep myself from that. So that's why I got methadone. The methadone keeps me at a level where I can, you know, feel comfortable, go about my day, not, you know, crave heroin.
Right.
Because that's a huge problem for me. I overdosed.
Yeah, you're going to kill yourself these days.
Yeah.
Especially with all the... I know a lot of stuff's getting laced with fentanyl, and yeah, you're going to get the wrong batch, and
yeah,
you'll be DOA.
Mm-hmm.
So has the methadone been successful for you?
Yeah, way more so than Suboxone. Especially
because... So has it been... So when's the last time you did heroin?
When was it? Yeah, it was like a week ago about.
Okay.
Right around when I started.
So is this the first time you've done methadone?
First time I've done methadone.
Oh, wow. Okay, yeah. So you're only a week into it.
Only a week into it, and it feels really good. It's compared to Suboxone, because I tried to get on methadone at a different clinic.
Right.
They wouldn't do it for me. They say all new patients, it's fairly mandated that they have to start on Suboxone. And
so they had enough patients already?
No, they are, it's just that they used, I think that the excuse they gave me was kind of bullshit. Like,
right. Regardless, they wouldn't give you access to it.
Yeah, no methadone. That's, you know, deal with Suboxone.
That's a great society, isn't it? Hey, yeah. You know, we know you're addicted to a really bad drug and you're going to kill yourself, but sorry, we can't help you.
Yeah, I mean, if they really wanted to get, like, help people, they would give them safe injection sites. And
I know probably as well as you do, or, you know, I don't know, but not that it needs to be a contest, but. Yeah, we're not really good at the whole helping people part.
I know.
It's a little more, but that's kind of... we can get into a philosophical conversation about capitalism.
Oh, yeah.
I spent a good 3.5 weeks from September into October in Europe.
Yeah.
I had planned a 10-month... My youngest went away to school, and I went to Europe for the first time. Well, I've been there before, but by myself on vacation. And it is very clear that, you know... For all the bad stigma that we associate with socialism,
mm-hmm.
that socialism works much better for the people.
Mm-hmm.
Your experience would be wholly different in Europe. And you know, I almost to some extent advocate, hey, get yourself to Europe. You know, you'd have a fighting chance. Mm-hmm. There's a much better safety net there. So the, you know, the kind of needs that you're talking about, which is, hey, I just need a breather. Give me a month, give me 3 months, 6 months, I don't know, whatever it is, where I don't have to pay for anything, and I can kind of get in my own space and start to work through some of these things and be productive, you know, then I can get off having to do anything.
Yeah.
You know, if you did it for 3.5 years, it's clearly within your grasp, right? And that happened all by yourself with very little external help, it sounded like, right?
Mm-hmm. And I did it myself. I came out here into a halfway house. And, well, it was like a sober living environment, and I got the job, went through school. I felt good, but I still didn't know kind of where I was going or what I, you know, wanted to do.
Yeah. So, yeah, just to give, and we'll pop back into Foresight for a second. So, you know, people tend to dominate either having self-esteem or self-confidence issues, right?
Mm-hmm.
Self-esteem is how you look at the past, and that drives how you feel about the present. And those are, I don't like myself, I don't value myself, right? You have some issues, everyone does at some point, right? If you keep getting beat on, anyone's going to feel like crap, right?
Mm-hmm.
But you don't strike me as being a person who's necessarily self-esteem dominant as far as your issues are concerned. You're much more on the self-confidence side, which is, you know, it's discretion and perseverance. And discretion is, what do I need to do here? And then what do I need to do? Perseverance is, after I picked it, how do I follow through on it and make it successful, right?
Mm-hmm.
What the thing that people understand is that you need to have these basic skills in place by the time you're age 3, right? But when you grow up in a war zone, that shit goes out the window.
Yeah.
You don't get to pick up discretion. Your data, you're literally living in a war zone as a 2 or 3 year old. And your thing is like, oh shit, how do I not get into trouble?
Mm-hmm.
You're fighting a war, and it's basic survival is what you're at. So you don't build up those emotional skills, right? And that's essentially the core of your problem, right? You know, when people have problems with self-control, certainly anyone who does a drug is in that area. It's a discretion thing, right?
Mm-hmm.
And the reason why is because as a little young kid, there really weren't, you know, the notion of boundaries wasn't really a thing to you, right? You know, you weren't really necessarily given the ability to grow that skill, right? Your first skill was, oh shit, I got to survive. And I don't know, was your father physically abusive or just verbally abusive?
Both.
Right. So there you go, right? So it's bad enough if someone is an alcoholic and they're, what do you call it? Was it from alcohol or just?
No,
just...
anger, a lot of it's tied to the pills, pain medication.
Yeah. And, I mean, to some extent, it doesn't matter what it's from, right? Yeah. You know, abuse is abuse. And if you're a kid growing up in an abusive environment, and it's highly destabilizing, right? And you know, so your world is, oh, this is what I expect, and planning for tomorrow is just, you know, something we all take for granted. You're like, I don't know what I'm doing an hour from now, right? How can I plan for tomorrow, let alone next week? So it's just, you said you got an associate's degree?
Yeah,
that's astonishing crap.
Yeah,
I don't know if you get that.
I mean,
right. Yeah, you're so caught up in a moment. You're not really reflecting on kind of the good things that you've done.
Yeah, it really did feel kind of empty, especially in even feeling like getting clean. Or I have a hard time accepting praise.
Right. Yeah. I'm sorry. I mean, you know, I'm joking.
Yeah.
You got it. Good. So it's an interesting dynamic because part of the things that you're talking about is, you know, is being able to be okay with stability, right? Mm. And accepting praise and kind of getting that positive feedback. Again, that was a whole mechanism that you just didn't get as a kid, right? You got all the bad part. Yeah. And they tell you, and you know, who knows to what extent it's accurate, if 1 out of 5 times if of your interactions with your kid, if 1 out of 5 times is negative, all the other interactions are going to feel negative. So if 20% of your interactions are negative, they kind of overshadow all the good stuff, right? So what happens is that you kind of don't get credit and you know, you don't get to build skills in those areas. Hmm. To me, this is the pity. Who you are is very predictable. I don't mean that in a bad way, right?
Mm-hmm.
But everyone who's out there who's not understanding you and judging you, you have to know that they're idiots, right? Hmm. And that says a lot about them. It's really hard for you to discern that at times, but in the end, what someone says, they're telling you what they think, right? They're looking at their model of the world, and they're telling you what they think of you based upon that model, right? Mm-hmm. And if they look at you and they give you judgment and they don't understand you, then their model is limited, right? And you probably because some of the things that you do scare them, right? You know, and they don't relate to it. Of course, we have this whole war on drugs. How's that war going, right? We win in that? Yeah, that's even worse than the war in Vietnam. And, you know, we're 50 years into it. And, yeah, we're not going anywhere. But anyway, I digress. I feel for you because you want to do the right thing, right? To me, it's clear talking to you here that it's, oh, crap, I want to do the right thing, but I don't know how to do it. Yeah. And when you lack the self-control, the way that you get it is by being directed by someone else temporarily. Mm. That's kind of your crutch. But they have to understand you. You're going to be a wired guy, right? You're going to be all over the place. They're going to have to be okay with that, right? Mm. If they're like, most people go into the room you were talking about, like that group setting room, and they sit with people like you, and they get all itchy and triggery, right? Mm-hmm. You have to find a special person who's okay with it. I don't want to, talk down to your present girlfriend, but you know, clearly you guys are triggering each other.
Yeah.
Right. I don't know if there is a way to keep you two together and to get a parent in a room, so to speak. You know what I mean?
We've had other people in the relationship, and it's right. Just
kind no. I didn't. I mean, in an average. I meant more. You know, just and that's more in the proverbial figurative sense, right? You know, in the end.
No, that's. I mean, that's what I mean. Like, kind of being in there, being not only involved in the relationship, but living with us and trying to, like,
right.
Be that third person, like, voice of reason.
Yeah. And
it's,
yeah.
It's been, it hasn't worked out.
Yeah. Well, it's tough. Most people don't have the, I would love to, the halfway house. I would love to run my own halfway house in my way, right? Mm. And, it's funny. I had a person briefly stay with me for a period of time. And other friends asking me, it's like, how do your kids get along? And I'm thinking, well, what does she mean by that? And before I can respond to anything, my friend who was staying with me goes, they never argue. I said, yeah, you're right. Because the second I hear it, I'm calling all three of their names and we're sitting down here. And to allude, to some extent, that's kind of what you need, right? Mm. You need someone who's there all the time. And the second that you two get into it, is that self-control that you're not able to go in the moment.
Yeah.
You get called down by dad or mom or whoever it is, and you sit here and you say, sit down. Chill out for a second. Don't say anything. I don't hear anything negative out of either of your mouths, right? And to have you both chill out. And I know that can work with you because I can see it's working now. Hmm. Did you see how you just calmed down right now?
Yeah.
Right?
Yeah, I respond very well with the
Well, the thing is that inherently you know what you're lacking, right?
Yeah.
And it's really hard. And the tough thing is that when you become, an adult, you're really tricky, right? You know what it is, but you can also wiggle out of it, right? So it's not like it's a real easy role. Not anyone who comes in and tells you what to do. They have to really know, a whole bunch of things. But I don't know. I guess I'll kind of end with there is hope for you. You should know that. The simple fact that you did that 3.5 years, whatever period it was,
yeah,
that's amazing. Even if you felt like crap and you felt it like wasn't rewarding or something like that, it says something.
And I know I could do it again too. It's just I want to go back to school.
All right. What would you take?
I would take everything. I mean, I just like the environment.
So you have to pick something per semester.
Maybe film. Film is the only thing I've ever felt any kind of passion towards or for.
Do you have a phone? Are you able to,
Yeah, I do have a phone.
Right.
It's all cracked up, and the podcast I do is a movie podcast.
Right.
So
are you able to do videos on it?
Yeah.
Right.
Maybe there's my start.
You could do a YouTube channel. I mean, the funny thing is that as far as all over the place you are, you're kind of a charming guy, you're really honest and authentic. Mm. And you could literally start like a YouTube channel that, hey, I want to figure out how to get out of this. And just, I think half the time, a lot of people, when they see someone else doing the same struggle, it can be inspirational. There's a little comfort, And there's this kind of camaraderie that can come along with it.
Mm-hmm.
Right? It can go both ways. You can, you know, also fall into a void and that's, yeah. or a black hole, and that's not good. But at the same time, there's the, you know, in the end, you kind of, you do need that external support. And you recognize that to some extent. It's just finding the right dynamic where you can kind of get that on a regular basis to help channel you in the right direction.
Yeah.
Right? That's cool. I mean, I'm good with the podcast at this point. It's been really interesting. Do you have any other questions before we end things, or are you good?
Did we get to the
you've earned the full amount, and right, that's cool, right? But do you have, are you good at this point?
Yeah,
so in the end, it is, you know, it's and the money is great, but I am literally wanting to go through these things to help you talk through this stuff so that you can maybe become a little more emotionally centered in my kind of where you're at and what's going on and where you want to go.
Yeah.
So I truly mean, is there any question you have for me now? Are you okay?
Well, I'd definitely like to get around, definitely like to hear this again. Right. But I mean, I don't know.
All right, fair enough.
Yeah, I don't know.
Think about it. You know, it's funny. I was editing one of my other podcasts earlier today, and going through it again might be really, you know, interesting for you.
Mm-hmm.
So it'll be. I'll let you know when it's taking me a while. I'm kind of new to the podcast thing. I'm trying to figure out what tags I want to use and da-da-da and so on.
What
do you use to do the tagging?
The tagging, we do, my sister does everything with it. We use what is it? I can't even remember what it is.
I have some bigger production issues. Like, for example, I was looking at using chapters. Did you do chapters within your podcast? You know what I'm talking about?
No.
I'm an uber geek.
Yeah,
I was doing web development in 1994 before anyone knew there was a web, and mm-hmm. I was doing multimedia development before that. So I'm uber geeky. Mm-hmm. So I get really specifics into, you know, like, for example, when I post my podcast, I want to know what the best hashtags are that I could use,
mm-hmm.
so I can maybe get in some Google up on some Google searches.
Oh, so
I found who my pod host is going to be. I'm going to go with Podbean, and they're good because they do audio podcasts as well as video podcasts.
Ah.
And I plan on migrating at some point in the future to video podcasts. So I want to have that option. I don't want to have to change providers. So, yeah. Okay. But anyway, yeah, if there's you have our email address. If you have any advice or just input, and we'll send you a follow-up email.
Okay.
So we're definitely, you know, more than cool to hear your feedback. But thank you for your time, and I appreciate your comment.
No, yeah, thanks for having me. Okay.